You are listening to a recording of the Open Society Foundations, working to build vibrant and tolerant democracies worldwide. Visit us at opensocietyfoundations.org.
Welcome to the Open Society Foundations. My name is Diego Garcia. I'm a senior program officer with the Global Drug Policy Program. As many of you know, at Open Society, we've been promoting innovation and a radical change on the drug control regime. The work that we're gonna see today is part of that, is a part of a new exploration. And it's basically research that we were able to conduct with our great partner, Church World Services, in an intersection between children's rights, incarceration, and drug policy. This is a very new topic for everyone. And the findings that you are gonna hear today are actually the first time that everyone or anyone has seen around these issues. As I said, the new report, Childhood That Matters, or Niñez Que Cuenta in Spanish, it's an innovation for us, so is for Child War Services. They are a great partner in this endeavor, and I would like to welcome and give thanks to Maurice Bloom, who is the Vice President of Child War Services, and he's taking time from his busy agenda to be with us today. Maurice.
Better? Okay. Good evening, everybody. So my name is Maurice Bloom, and I work for Church World Service. I'm their Executive Vice President, and I'm also our representative towards the UN. And so I often attend those meetings at the UN, and then there are these men with suits and ties. They come in and do a five-minute presentation, and they leave again. So I always thought that is so disrespectful. And it is exactly what I'm going to do today. But I think what I hope is that when you hear, you know, my story, that maybe you understand why I leave you in 5 minutes. Because, and that is often, I think this report is also about that, in terms of trying to ensure that the voice of people in different settings are being heard, and that as a start for a better situation. So I will have to leave in 5 minutes because this is the only day where my organization organizes an event as well in New York. So we have another event 20 minutes from here, and you know our board members, our supporters are there, so I really need to be there. So my apologies, and I'm really thrilled that my colleagues and partners, so my colleague Luciano from our office in Argentina is here, with our partners from, now I have to ensure that I pronounce this properly, Gurises Unidos, you know, they are also here, our partners, and Coletta Youngers, our partner at WOLA, Corina Giacomello, the lead researcher of the project. I would like to thank them, they're all also here, and I think what you will realize that you know, the fact that all these stories come to the surface and that you will hear that is really important to improve, you know, not only the situation in Latin America, but ultimately there will be a lot of lessons for the rest of the world as well, is to ensure that voices of children are heard, that often we, you know, start with making assumptions why a person is acting like he or she is at that moment. Many thanks to OSF, and we had already a relationship before this research, but I'm really thrilled that you know, they are, you know, a tremendous partner within this whole endeavor. So I think the report Childhood Matters is extremely important as an advocacy tool that we hope we will not only use, but will also be helpful for many others. And I think it's especially important during this month where we commemorate the Convention of the Right of the Child. So we are really proud to present this report, and the voices of children are extremely important in all the work we do. I would like to highlight one thing, because, and that is the presence of Facundo Sessa. you know, that we have been able, and that is what we try to do, is to really have somebody that was part of the research, that was interviewed, and that you can hear firsthand tonight, you know, his experiences and his opinion. So thanks again to OSF, and have a great evening.
Thank you very much, Maurice, for taking the time and coming to OSF. As Maurice was saying, we are lucky to have a great panel today to explore this issue. We're going to hear from Corina, who was the lead researcher on this report that has different chapters for different countries in Latin America. Then we're going to hear from Colera Youngers, who's a senior fellow at WOLA. She's a longtime partner of OSF and a leader in the field of drug policy reform. She's a mentor of many of these issues as well. So we're lucky to have you here. Thank you. Then we're going to hear from Luciano, who is a program officer at Church World Services. He is basically the mastermind behind this report. So he has pushed and pulled all the strings to make this happen. And finally, we're happy to have Facundo Sosa. Facundo is a young leader in Montevideo. He has been leading a group of young people that has suffered the effects of incarceration and drug-related offenses. So as Maurice was saying, we're celebrating, and OSF wants to join the celebration of the convention. But as well, we shouldn't move forward without reflecting on two events that happened earlier this week in relation to drug control and children. In August this year, the Colombian president, Iván Duque, was celebrating a bombardment of an insurgents camp, where he said they were accomplished killing 15 narco-terrorists, as he called them. 2 days ago, we learned that 8 of those narco-terrorists were between 12 and 17 years old. 2 days or 3 days ago in Mexico, there was a family ambush by an armed actor related to a cartel. 6 children died, all members of the same family. So if we think about the convention and try to celebrate accomplishments of the convention, we should also think about what the drug control regime has imposed on children as well. The convention, the single convention on narcotic drugs, that's ruled also by the UN, is many times clashing with the convention of the children's rights. So on incarceration and the Childhood That Matters report, we'd like to hear from Corina about the report, their findings, and then trigger a conversation with the panelists and you. Thank you very much.
Hi, how are you? Thank you, Diego. Shall I stay here? Can you hear me? Okay, then I'll stay here. Well, it's a pleasure to be here. Thank you, Diego, for organizing this. And thank you, Luciano, Gurises Unidos, for the trust in giving me the opportunity to be the coordinator of Childhood That Matters. And the idea is that I present the report. After this, we will watch a small video that we did in the context of Childhood That Matters, and then we'll go to the panel. So Childhood That Matters is the product of 2 years' work that we conducted in 8 countries in Latin America: Costa Rica, Chile, the Dominican Republic, Mexico, Colombia, Brazil, Panama, and Uruguay. In all these countries, we gather quantitative and qualitative data on children with incarcerated parents, mothers and fathers, who are in prison for drug-related offenses. Our focus was on minor nonviolent drug offenses. It was a titanic task to get data, because these children are simply unseen and unaccounted for. But luckily, we had people who did an amazing job. Actually, Childhood That Matters is the proof that teamwork actually works, because it was 8 teams of amazing researchers, 2 NGOs, a great funder that all together could, you know, in just 2 years have these 8 national reports and a regional report that looks at an intersection that is usually not seen, the crossing between children's rights, drug policy, and incarceration. So in all the countries, we did semi-structured interviews with children with incarcerated parents, interviewing altogether 70 girls, boys, adolescents, that generously, with trust, shared with us what it meant to have their mother or father in prison and how their life had changed because of that. And we also like to stress, as part of this teamwork and what it matters to have finally a piece of work that tells us what it means, what's the impact of drug policy on children, that two members of the Committee of the Rights of the Child actually wrote a prologue to the report. So we really encourage you to read it. The Committee of the Rights of the Child hasn't really pronounced itself on drug courts. And actually, the convention is often used to justify death penalty. So it's very important that we are looking at the intersection between drug policy and this convention from a completely different perspective, that not only the UN bodies on drug policies, but not even the Committee on the Rights of Children had actually seen. So what are some of the data? Well, as you might know, drug offenses are the leading cause for the mass incarceration in all the American continent. And Latin America is no exception. So the big prison crisis we have in Latin America, violence, auto-government from criminal groups in Mexico, for example, appalling conditions, violation of all sorts of rights like education, health, violation of the rights of the children who go to visit, overcrowding, and so on. Part of it is related to the implementation of harsh drug policies that always prefer the use of prison, pretrial detention, longer sentences, no alternatives to incarceration above other alternatives. So drug policy, the implementation of the international drug system is the leading cause of incarceration in Latin America and the leading cause for a prison crisis. However, when looking at the data on how many people are in prison for drug offenses, we have to make a gender difference, which is very striking and just very evident. So these are some percentages of the amount of men in prison for drug offenses. As you can see in Panama, we have about 26.2% of men in prison. In Ecuador are in prison for drug offenses, and so on and so forth. But look at the difference when we look at women in prison for drug offenses. So even if, in quantitative terms, we have more men in prison for whatever crime, and also for drug offenses, when we look at proportion, drug policies are impacting on women mainly. And this is clear in this data. And that does have an impact on the children with incarcerated mothers, also because of the gender arrangements in the region that still put a heavier load on women as caretakers of children. So, for example, Panama, 70% of women in prison are in prison for drug offenses. So the gender dimension, then Coleta will tell us more about it, but it's one of the issues we have to look at. However, when looking at children with incarcerated parents, with all the data we could gather, we have an estimation of about 2,300,000 children with an incarcerated father or mother in Latin America, so more than 2 million children. This is the best estimate we could get with the data available in 25 countries in the region. Of these children, 500,000 are kids, are children, are sons of the war on drugs. They are a direct product of these specific drug policies. 20% of these kids have their mother, father, both of them, siblings, aunts, uncles, in prison for a drug-related crime, usually a minor non-violent offense that could be answered to with a non-custodial measure. So that's one of the issues as well. So when we talk about children with incarcerated parents, we talk about like a general group, a category that we have to name in this way so that it's made visible, but something that, you know, in a context where they're not usually seen. But we never have to forget that each story is unique and as such must be approached. That's not just a rhetoric thing or, you know, every life is unique kind of thing. It's one of the recommendations of the Committee of the Rights of Children on how to legally and judicially approach how to handle the cases of children with incarcerated parents on a case-by-case methodology. So we cannot use just a, you know, general framework when sentencing, for example, a person who commits a drug offense, but we have to look at how this will impact on his or her children from the perspective of the unique life and situation of that children, of that child, sorry. But also within the big group of COIPs, we have to look at what are the different categories or subgroups and how every category has a different situation. So we have children who live in prison with their mothers, and then at some point will go back to the community, and that will have different implications. Children who live outside and can go and visit. So what does it mean to go and visit a prison? And Facundo will tell us, about it. What there are children who live outside the prison and cannot go to visit because they don't have an adult to take them there. Because the way they're searched are so terrible that, you know, their parents will just say, don't come back anymore, I don't want you to go through those searches. We have children that we define as transnational children, and they are completely the product of drug policies and migration policies. With the term transnational children, we refer to those children who live in the country where their relative is detained, but is not the country of origin, or those children who live in their country of origin, but it's different from the country where the referent is detained. So let's say I get arrested in the US for introducing cocaine, my son remains in Mexico, he's a transnational child, and that will have different implications. So we have all different groups of children we have to look at, and we have to be very careful when talking about this. You know, children with incarcerated parents are always having the sensibility to look at specific situations of each of them and each group. So the most important part of this report is children's voices. 70 of them. They all trusted us. They all shared their story, their pain, what they went through to help us build this product, to help us be here and try to make a difference, and try to make a change. These children told us, through their voices, how we had to analyze the information, how we had to structure it. So if you don't have time to read the report, which I highly recommend you do anyway, read the chapter 3, which is where the children's voices are included, and they're separated in these big groups of analyses. So the different forms of violences children are exposed to. The main source of violence is not the family, is not drugs, is the state. That's the most violent actor in their life. When they arrest, when they beat, when they treat them like criminals, when they go to visit in a prison, when they're at school and they get bullied. So the state is the most violent actor in their life. They can get stigma or support in the community and at school. Usually, they get both. We have an analysis of how they perceive the crimes associated with the drugs. So we have an example here from a girl from Panama saying, my mom did it because she could not read and didn't have a job. Who was going to hire her like that? I promised that I would teach her to read so she would get out of that. That's Gabriella. Then perception of state authorities. We have Carla from Costa Rica saying they should not take advantage of the power they have. There should be mutual respect. Visits to prison and screening, that's crucial. And then we'll hear more about it. And then the impact of incarceration on children's daily life, which is bigger. It affects, you know, emotions, care arrangements, the economy. You know, they come from the most disadvantaged, the poorest sectors of society. And with incarceration, poverty still increases, because they lose a provider, but also because in Latin American prisons, who pays for everything, the mattress they sleep on, the toilet paper, the shampoo, the food, everything is the family, not the state. So these are some of the implications. And again, children's voices are the backbone of these implications. So some findings and recommendations. COIPs, children with incarcerated parents, are exposed to multiple forms of violence, violence in the neighborhood, violence in the family sometimes, violence from the state, violence during the police raids in the state, in their houses, in their bedrooms, against their bodies. Children with incarcerated parents are usually defined as the invisible victims, collateral damage. But here we state they're not invisible. It's not like with a magic wand, we have children with incarcerated parents and everything, you know, gets sorted out. They're invisibilized by drug policy. The Single Convention of 1961 has the purpose to protect society and children from the evil of drug use. But in order to protect some children, the parents of others must be incarcerated. must be treated as criminals, must be locked away. So these children exist so that other children can live out in a drug-free world. So they're a direct product of drug policy, and we have to change that. We have to change that narrative and that reality. The implementation of punitive drug policies directly impacts the increasing number of COIP. Then we mention again transnational COIP as an issue of special concern. Schools and communities can reproduce stigma and discrimination, but also they are the places where stigma and discrimination can be fought against, and you know where they should have better inclusion and opening from the you know their community and so on. In other stories of children, we have a lot of ambivalence. Children express a desire to do things, to live things in a different way. They express a desire for change. However, unless they get public policies, full support, no stigma, social inclusion, they're very likely to repeat again or to see again, once and again, the same story. So it's very important to take into account this need and desire for change, but also to create the conditions for that change to actually take place. Specifically, links direct to drug policies in terms of conclusions, violence in police operation is particularly acute in where drugs are sold or in specific neighborhoods where the war on drugs is waged. Criminalization of drug users as traffickers and pursuit of micro-trafficking is, again, the leading cause for incarceration. So a real decriminalization or changes, I mean, drug policy reform, could help to have less children with incarcerated parents for drug offenses. Imprisonment often happens in sites far from home. That's the case in Mexico, for example, where people accused of drug offenses are put in federal prisons that are usually in the middle of nowhere. It's very expensive to go there, so they get completely abandoned. And invasive screenings when entering prison. If your father or mother is thought to be a drug trafficker, then you are one of, as well, of course. So they will search you more invasively to make sure you're not taking drugs into prison. These are just some of the findings, you know, the specific impact of drug policies. The gender dimension, of course, women in prison is a very important issue, and it's much more known about worldwide. But we have to look also at the women who stay outside. The women caretakers of people in prison, so the mothers, the sisters, the wives, the state is basically relying on women undertaking traditional gender roles to do the job the state is completely incapable and unwilling to do. So women are doing all the job, making sure that the lawyers actually get the process going, that the judges do their work, that their men have their food, their toilet paper, their whatever. So it's a completely consequence on women caretakers outside the prison. Again, transnational COIPs, and we have to go beyond women in prison and start looking at men in prison also as fathers who have a right to fatherhood and to be considered as such. Because when we think of children in prison, we always think mothers, mothers. Most of them are fathers, and they want to be fathers as well. And then we have 38 amazing recommendations. I'm not going into them. Divided in three groups: comprehensive policies directed towards children, generation of information, and recommendations on how children with incarcerated parents should be seen and treated in the judicial system, in the criminal justice system. So I think this is it. Oh, just one thing on the recommendation. Again, they're all the product of what children showed us. You know, there's a lot of like academic review and stuff into this report, but again, the backbone is the children's voices, and it's also the most important thing of this event, so I'm going to shut myself up now, and we can proceed to watch the video and then to the panel. Thank you.
Lo que no me gusta es que mi mamá esté en la cárcel.
Como que entré en depresión.
Yo creo que ellos necesitan la plata para los niños.
Fueron cambios muy bruscos.
Desde el operativo pasó eso, no me da hambre.
Thank you. me escondí, pero vi cómo le pegan a mi mamá.
No sé en qué momento de la noche a la mañana me lo pueden estar ahí.
Para mí lo que me molesta es que me revisen.
Cuando mi mamá se fue, nos separaron a los cuatro. Un día no pude hablar con mi maestro.
Porque tuve que truncar ahí todos los estudios para empezar a trabajar.
Me la quitaron en la plena etapa de la adolescencia.
Pues casi no vamos, más que nada por la falta de dinero.
Me dicen hija traficante, cosas así.
Ya no me lleva a la escuela.
Dijeron 8 años. Ay, Dios mío.
Pienso que así están exagerando.
Cuando estaba mi mamá, a mí me gustaba jugar mucho. Ahora ya no.
Okay, so this is one of the two videos that you can find in the page. Can we put the presentation back on? I forgot one slide. Thank you. And all the material we did, the regional report, the 8 national reports, and the 2 videos are available in the page that I'm going to show you. And in the meantime, I kindly ask Luciano, Facundo, and Coletta to come to the panel. Look what we did in 2 years. So yeah, here in this page, you can find all the information and the 2 videos. ¿Sabes qué? Me siento yo cerca de Facundo, ¿no? Para poder hablar. Okay. So, the idea now is to have a conversation among the 4 of us. I'm going to moderate it. I'm going to be very strict. I'm not going to be rude. So if you see that I shut them up, it's for the sake of listening to the most important person in the room, that is Facundo. Entonces, lo que les acabo de decir es que voy a ser muy estricta con ellos para poderte escuchar a ti, que eres la persona que más importa de este panel.
Yeah.
And so we're going to start with Coletta. Coletta Youngers, as Diego already introduced her, is a senior fellow at WOLA. She also works with IDPC. She's a reference for all of us working in drug policy reform. She's one of the people who most knows about drug policy and drug policy reform in Latin America, about women in prison for drug offenses. But she is, more than anything else, a very good friend and the person who made this possible by introducing us to Luciano and everything. So thank you for many reasons. And so we're going to start with Coletta, and I'd like to ask you from, you know, all your baggage of knowledge and experience, what is the contribution of Childhood That Matters in order to understand or to give some other ideas on how drug policy reform should take place in Latin America, and also how does it build up on all the work you've been doing on women and incarceration for drug-related offenses in Latin America? What's the importance of listening to these children?
Good evening, and thank you very much for the wonderful introductions. Can you hear me okay? It sounds very loud. Okay, I think that's better if I put it a little farther away. So I'm just gonna be very brief, really provide comments more as a commentator, so that there's time for Facundo in particular to be able to speak, and we don't have a lot of time. So I have 4 basic points I want to make. Is this working okay? No. I'll just leave that there. I get an extra 30 seconds for that. Is that better? Yeah, it's much better for me. I don't hear myself. So anyway, I have 4 points I want to make. But first, I want to begin by describing 2 aha moments in my life. So I'm part of a research team called the Collective for the Study of Drugs and the Law. And we did the first report looking at the way in which drug laws had created the prison overcrowding crisis in Latin America. And so when we did the first study on that, we looked at different sectors, and one of them was women. And when I saw the data that Corina presented before about the not only the percentages of women incarcerated for drugs, but the increasing rate of women's incarceration for drug offenses, it really it was just shocking to me that that was happening. And that's when I first started working on the issue of women and incarceration. I think one other point I would make in addition to what Corina talked about is it's very important to recognize that most of these mothers, most of these women are not only mothers, they're single mothers. So if you, depends on the country, but we find countries where 80, 90% of women in prison are single mothers. So you can imagine the impact of that on their children. So my second big aha moment was when I saw the estimates that were produced as a result of this project. There may be more than 2 million children with one of their parents behind bars in Latin America, and nearly half of those are there have their parents incarcerated for drug offenses. Those are staggering statistics. I think it's just a really stark illustration of the tremendous damage done by the carceral state and by punitive drug policies. So that brings me to my first point, which is this report is a wake-up call. Corina didn't go into the guideline, to the recommendations and the guidelines that they, policy guidelines that have been produced as a part of this project. You should all review them. It's a tremendously important effort. But these policy guidelines must be taken up at every level, from national level governments down to school officials. And this is, of course, also true in the United States, which is not part of this, this study, but where we see that women are not only separated from their children when they are put behind bars, but can be permanently separated from them when those kids get lost in the foster care system, they lose their parental rights, and that sort of thing. The second point I want to make is that this report fills a void in the research and in our advocacy efforts. So I mentioned, said before, the research team that I'm part of in Latin America, we've done a lot of studies documenting the impact of drug policies in Latin America, particularly on prisons. There are lots of other groups who've done amazing work around drug policy, lots of good networks. We also have now the working group on women, drug policy, and incarceration that Corina and is works very closely with me on. We produced a guide for policy reform. We focus on the disproportionate impact of drug policies on women, and there is definitely a disproportionate impact. But I think this report is really, it really challenges us, and Corina is constantly challenging me along these lines, to address the impact on fathers. We can't just talk about mothers. We have to talk about fathers, parents, families, and children. We have to step back and take a broader look. And I've really learned a lot myself from my own work in accompanying this project. Third point, this report provides even more evidence for the urgency of reforming drug laws now. There are a whole range of reforms that many of us in the room have been working on now for quite a long time. I won't go into them really in any detail. Decriminalization of possession for personal use, proportionality in sentencing, creating legal regulated cannabis markets, et cetera, et cetera. But the bottom line is we need to stop putting people in cages. And we should at least start that effort by working with those accused of lower level drug and other low level, less serious offenses. A lot of these parents we're talking about probably should not even be in the criminal justice system. And if they are, they should be able to benefit from alternatives to incarceration. And when I talk about alternatives to incarceration, I don't mean house arrest or electronic monitoring that doesn't allow you to be a parent. We need to find community-based alternatives that allow men and women to continue to parent and provide for their kids. There's one interesting example in the United States where the state of Tennessee recently passed a primary caregiver bill, which requires courts to consider options for keeping a parent with their children, offering alternative community-based sentences for those with children who are convicted of nonviolent offenses. It'd be something interesting to look at in Latin America. And my last point is that this report underscores the need to incorporate the voices of these children in national level, regional, and international debates. I think we've done a pretty good job of making progress and incorporating the voices of formerly incarcerated women into those debates, But we have not done that with the children of these women, and of course the fathers as well. The Church World Service is making great strides in beginning to do that. They've done really good work within the Organization of American States at the regional level. There is a tremendous need to do this at the level of the United Nations, and particularly the Commission on Narcotic Drugs, which is the annual meeting of drug policy officials from around the world at the UN level, where, as Corina mentioned, the debate on children is very much focused on the dangers of drug use for children and not the dangers of drug policy for children. So I really hope we're able to replicate this panel this year in March at the Commission on Narcotic Drugs with OSF support. anyway, again, this is, he didn't ask me to say that, I swear. Anyway, but again, this is a challenge to us, to all of us who are working on drug policy and or incarceration, that we need to incorporate these voices in our work and in the debate. And finally, am I okay on time?
1 minute.
Okay, yeah, I have 1 minute. I wanted to just conclude with a little anecdote or story. I don't know if any of you have gone to the National Council for Incarcerated and Formerly Incarcerated Women and Girls here in the United States does an annual conference called Free Her that just happened last month in Montgomery, Alabama. So we organized a workshop with family members of people who've been in prison. We brought 5 people from Latin America, and we did this with the SE Justice Group, which is an amazing organization based in California. So it turned out that many of the participants in the workshop had been in prison and for long terms, like as people were talking, it seemed like 20 years was the sort of average amount of time, and they were trying to rebuild their relationships with their now adult children. And at the same time, there was another group that came of young women who had actually just spoken in a plenary about what it was like to be children of incarcerated parents and talked very openly about, we'd just heard them talking very openly about the tremendous anger, frustration, just all of the things that they faced in having to support their parents in prison, et cetera, et cetera. So what I had planned as a discussion of sharing organizing strategies across borders ended up being this this emotional dialogue between these two groups about how to rebuild families. At one point, everyone in the room was crying, including the two interpreters. And I felt I might have gotten in over my head, but fortunately, it was okay. And I think it was a really healing moment for a lot of the people who had participated in the workshop. So I think these are the kinds of discussions that need to happen, and I'm very certain that this report will contribute to and provoke more such discussions. Thank you.
Thank you. An applause, please. Okay, thank you, Coletta, a lot. So now, Luciano, as Diego already explained, Luciano is part of a Church World Service, the office in Argentina, in Buenos Aires. He's also part of the coordination team of the regional platform for the defense of rights of children with incarcerated parents in Latin America and the Caribbean, Plataforma NAPES, that's how it's called. But again, he's a great friend and especially the mastermind behind the project, the one who was pulling all of our strings and making this happen, basically. So, Luciano, after all, like, 5 years of work around this topic, after the reports you've produced, the conferences you've given, the, you know, the meetings you've been to, what are the highlights of Childhood That Matters? In which way does this report add up to the work you've been doing and to the work of the platform in Latin America and the Caribbean?
Well, thank you. Can you hear me? Well, I have to start by thanking, of course, OSF and all of you for being here, and particularly some old friends that I met. Actually, when we first started working around this issue, there was nothing in Latin America about children with incarcerated parents. So because I work for a US-based organization, I had the chance to come to New York and to go to Brooklyn and to meet the people from the Osborne Association, the guys from Echoes of Incarceration, that I'm happy that 5 years down the line are here taking pictures and listening to these stories that I actually first started listening from them. So 5 years down the line, when I thought that I was not going to get surprised by listening to the voices of these children, I was wrong. So when we heard, you hear some of the testimonies, if you go to the video that it has 9 minutes, you can hear more. And if you want to hear more, we can send you more. But it is just so clear to me, to us, that these kids are directly impacted. I was on Saturday at a symposium here at John Jay, and they asked me to redefine directly impacted. And I didn't need to do that. I showed some of these sentences and some of the things that the kids were saying, and people were so clear that these kids are directly impacted. So for me, the highlight of this report are definitely the voices of these children. I mean, I won't get tired of listening to that. And that somehow is the thing that push us to do more. And the second thing is, for most of the countries, or for all the countries that have signed the Convention on the Rights of the Child, that has constitutional level, like us in Argentina and Uruguay and most of all Latin American countries, and almost all countries in the world but one, it is very important that the Committee on the Rights of the Child has written the foreword. The Committee on the Rights of the Child in 2011 had a day of general discussion about this issue, and that, for us, became a roadmap on how to address this issue. We followed those recommendations, and that's how we planned the work we did for the last 5 years. So for us, this new report is the last thing that the Committee on the Rights of the Child has written about this issue, and it's linked to drug policy. So for us, it now becomes a new roadmap. And what we hope is that it will become also a new roadmap for people that, from the drug policy perspective, want to look at children's rights. So that's what I would say.
Wonderful. Now, going to the recommendations.
Yeah.
What's the position of the platform on that issue? Would you want some specific recommendations and public policies for children with incarcerated parents, or what are you suggesting with this report and with the work you're doing on children with incarcerated parents in terms of public policies?
Well, we live in a particular situation in Latin America where we have public policies, but none of those policies actually take this into consideration. It would be ideal for us that there is a program specifically targeted for children with incarcerated parents, as long as they ask for it. You know, I think that's an important thing. Sometimes we believe we need to create a program, but sometimes that's not what we need. For us, what we've been advocating for during the last 5 years, and you guys, maybe the ones that are specialized on this issue can correct me or can give your opinions afterwards, what we've been saying is that it's not that important to create a specific program for these children, although I've seen that when there are specific groups are really beneficial for the guys that are impacted. What we believe is that every public policy should take the rights of these children into consideration. We were in Guatemala a month ago, and our colleagues there said that they sort of made an overview, and all ministries but one, the Ministry of Energy, has something to do with the issue. They had something to do, like even the labor ministry, I don't know how you call it, they are important because they need to provide work for the parents when they come out of the prison, health, education, culture, recreational. They all need to understand that these children are there. They're just sometimes not saying it and not voicing it out because of the fear of stigma and discrimination. So to wrap it up and to say it out quite clear, we don't really, it would be great, we don't feel that we can achieve in our lifetime public policies for children with incarcerated parents in all countries. So what we hope is that everyone from the field where you work, whatever you do, if you do research, if you do education, if you do quantitative data, that would be very important, you include this question. That's what we are. Include the question. Don't use it. Just give it to us and we'll use it. Prison systems, you are not there to take care of the children, right? Just collect the information. Ask the parents, the mothers, how many children do they have? And with that information, we'll try to create public policies to address those needs.
Wonderful. Thank you. Okay, so now we're going to give the word to Facundo. Facundo is a young leader from Uruguay, 19 years old. He's traveled all the way from Uruguay to come and stay with us today, accompanied by Gurises Unidos. And he comes from Malvin Norte, a neighborhood in Montevideo, characterized by high social exclusion and vulnerability. His father was incarcerated when he was a young kid. So now what I'm going to do is to ask Facundo some questions. I will speak to him in Spanish and sum up very briefly my questions in English. And then his answers will be translated to you by the translator, who we thank a lot. See, she doesn't have a microphone, yeah. So that's how we are going to do it. Bueno, nada más les dije, te presenté muy rápidamente que vienes de Uruguay, de un barrio marginado, que tienes 19 años y que tu papá fue encarcelado cuando eras apenas un niño, que eres un joven líder de Uruguay que nos hizo el favor de viajar hasta acá para estar con nosotros y que ahora yo voy a platicar contigo en español y que la traductora nos va a ayudar a traducir tus respuestas.
Bien.
¿Ok? Entonces, si te parece, como lo platicamos, primero la idea sería escuchar un poco qué pasó cuando detuvieron a tu papá, cómo empezó esta historia. Voy a traducir rápidamente la pregunta y te dejo la palabra.
Bien.
So the first question to Facundo is basically what happened. If he can share with us how his father got arrested and how this whole story unleashed.
Yo me estaba yendo a estudiar de mañana. Caen tres policías encapuchados.
I was having a breakfast in the morning and three police men with a cap. Hoods appeared.
Me revisaron la mochila, me tiraron las cuadernolas y a mi hermana la revisaron.
They checked my backpack. They checked my sister also.
Me preguntaron a dónde me iba. Le dije que me estaba yendo a estudiar, mi hermana también.
They asked me where I was going and I said I was going to study, going to school, and my sister also.
En ese momento, mi hermana y yo nos fuimos a estudiar y cuando volvimos para casa, ya mi padre ya se lo habían llevado.
¿Mi?
Mi padre ya se lo habían llevado. Cuando volvimos padre. De estudiar, ya mi padre ya se lo habían llevado.
Cuando, padres. Cuando él regresó de la escuela, su papá ya lo habían detenido.
El papá, yo no entendí el acento. So, and when I came back from school, my father was not there anymore. The police had taken...
¿Cuántos años tenías, Facundo?
How old are you, Facundo?
Yo en el momento tenía 12 años.
At this time I was 12.
¿Y tu hermana?
Mi hermana 15.
And your sister 15.
Y ayer platicamos de que esta fue una experiencia que cambió tu vida, ¿no? Que tener a alguien encarcelado cambia tu vida para siempre.
And yesterday we talked about this experience changed your life completely.
¿Cómo cambió? ¿Nos puedes decir cómo cambió tu vida, la de tu hermana y, bueno, y la de tu familia a partir de este hecho?
¿Nos puedes decir cómo? can you tell us how this experience changed for you, your sister and your whole family?
Después que mi padre cae preso, mi madre sufría de cáncer.
After my father was arrested, my mother got cancer.
Mi hermana se puso con la edad que tenía con una mentalidad más madura, por así decirlo.
My sister, at this point, the age that she was, she got much more mature.
Ella se hizo cargo de varias responsabilidades de la casa. Éramos recolectores de basura en el momento.
She was in charge. She had a lot of responsibilities in the house. And we collect trash.
Y mi madre al próximo año falleció. Y fue cuando mi hermana más responsable se hizo.
And following year, my mother died, and my sister was even more responsible than ever.
¿Tu hermana tuvo que dejar la escuela y empezar a trabajar?
Your sister had to quit school and start working.
Mi hermana en el momento dejó de estudiar, empezó a salir ella con un vecino en el carro y caballo.
En el
En la recolección de basura, la familia se dedicaba a recolectar y separar basura.
My sister stopped studying and started working, and she was collecting trash.
Y como, digamos, para mantener la relación con tu papá, tú ibas de visita, ¿no? A la cárcel.
To maintain a relationship with your father, you go visit him in the in prison, right?
¿Nos puedes platicar un poco cómo era ir a la cárcel, lo que implicaba, cómo eran las revisiones, cómo eran las condiciones de la visita?
Can you tell us a little bit more how was where the visit, how were the how they check on you, how they investigate you?
They searched you. The
conditions of these visits.
La cárcel donde estaba mi padre nos quedaba bastante lejos. Íbamos una vez por semana. Entrábamos al principio con mi madre.
The prison where my father was very far from us. In the beginning, we used to go with my mother.
Después que mi madre falleció, una hermana por parte de padre se hizo cargo de mi hermana y mío para poder entrar.
So after my mother died, my half sister, father's side, she was in charge of myself and my sister, so we could visit him in prison.
En el momento de entrar era bastante feo, nos hacían desnudarnos completamente.
When we entered to visit, it was very ugly. They strip us completely before entering.
Nos hacían agacharnos y toser tres veces para ver si llevábamos algo dentro del cuerpo.
And they made us bend over and cough three times to see if we had something inside our bodies.
Después, cuando entrabas al patio, era un patio chico para muchos presos y familias.
And then we go to a hall that had it was very small for the number of families and incarcerated people to meet.
Con el tema de la comida era dejaban pasar lo que ellos querían o lo que ellos permitían.
In terms of food, they would determine what we could bring or what we could not bring.
Ayúdame un poco, me trae.
Sí, no, estás perfecto. ¿Tú cómo te sentías cuando ibas de visita? ¿Qué representaba para ti ir a estar allí?
How did you feel when you go visit your father? What did this represent to you?
En el momento estaba feliz porque estaba viendo a tu padre, pero a la vez te daba vergüenza que todos los policías te estuvieran viendo desnudo y todo eso teniendo 12 años.
On one hand, I was happy to see my father, but on the other hand, I feel shame because you have to strip completely and show yourself to the policeman.
Eran muy chicos los dos, tú y tu hermana, cuando eso pasó. ¿Quién estuvo ahí para ustedes? ¿Qué hubo? ¿Qué faltó para poder vivir todo esto?
When this happened, you were very little, you're only 12, and your sister, what things had happened that helped you, or what things were missing that didn't help you?
Cuando todo esto pasó, los que nos acompañaron desde antes era Gurises Unidos, que la ONG.
When this happened, what helped me was Gurises Unidos.
Y más nadie, porque el Estado no te ayudaba en nada.
Because the state wouldn't give anything, any help.
Ni la justicia, ni nada. O sea, éramos nosotros con los gurises que nos ayudaban y ta.
It was because the state and judicial body wouldn't give us anything. Was just the help was coming from Gurises Unidos.
Y con respecto a tu papá, porque bueno, sabemos que estar en la cárcel es difícil para la familia, para la persona que está dentro, pero también la salida es difícil, ¿no? Regresar. ¿Qué hubo y qué faltó con respecto a la permanencia de tu papá en la cárcel y a su regreso con ustedes?
So, it's hard for your father also to be in prison. And when he came out of prison, what helped him or what lack that because it is difficult to go back to work and things like that. So what things helped your father and what things miss?
Cuando salió mi padre, lo primero que intentó hacer fue buscar un trabajo estable. No lo consiguió.
The first thing that my father did when he came out of jail, he tried to find a steady job, but he was not successful.
Por el simple hecho de tener antecedentes, entonces como que la sociedad lo descartaba un poco y volvió de vuelta al mismo ambiente de las drogas y todo eso.
Because he couldn't find a stable job because the society had put him aside, stigmatized him, and so he went back to do the same thing that he was doing.
Sorry, just to add that a very important issue was the criminal record that didn't let his dad get a job, not his antecedentes.
Okay.
Cuando mi padre salió, mi madre ya había fallecido y el trato con él era diferente. Él salió más violento de la cárcel y con mi hermana decidimos irnos de ahí de donde estaba él.
As when my father was released from jail, he was my mother had died already, and the treatment with him was different. So my sister and I we decided to leave him.
Bueno, y después de toda esta experiencia del hecho que estás aquí compartiendo esto con nosotros, ¿cuáles serían tus recomendaciones? ¿Por dónde crees que tendría que caminar esto para que otros pues no vivieran lo que viviste tú, no vivieran de la misma manera?
So according to your experience, what you have lived, what is are your recommendations not to avoid having the same situation for other kids in the same situation?
Y bueno, y también rescatar las cosas positivas.
And also talk about the positive things that had happened to
lo,
you.
Lo que yo recomendaría sería que al preso le brinden las cosas necesarias como para estar dentro de la cárcel, porque a la familia se le hace aún más difícil poder continuar.
The basic things they need, because it's harder for the family to have on top of everything to provide for basic things to people in prison.
Que el Estado le brinde oportunidades de trabajo a los presos cuando salen para no volver de vuelta a la misma situación.
To give opportunity to the incarcerated people when they leave jail, so they won't reincidate.
Que también le brinde apoyo tanto económico como psicológico a la familia y al preso, porque
also to give support, financial support and psychological support to the family and to the person that is incarcerated.
Porque en mi caso no tenía con quién hablar mi situación, entonces como que me guardaba todo para mí.
In my case, I didn't have anybody to talk about my situation, so I would keep all inside.
que al sistema penitenciario pedirles que las revisaciones no sean tan violentas y que no desechen las comidas que uno les brinda al preso.
I would ask that the penal system wouldn't be so violent and that they wouldn't trash the food that we bring to the incarcerated person.
Y a la justicia que cuando un preso cae por un delito, que no le alarguen tanto el tema de la demora para saber cuánto tiempo va a estar sentenciado, porque cada delito ya se sabe más o menos qué tiempo lleva de espera en la cárcel y te lo dicen a largo tiempo después que cae el preso.
And to the Justice Department, I would say that they should determine in a shorter period of time what is going to be the sentence, because they take a very long time to tell the person how long he or she is going to be in prison.
Estupendo. Muchas gracias, Facundo.
Ana.
So now we are going to have a session of questions and answers. And so please feel free to ask or comment. We just ask you to be kind of to the point with your comments or questions and to kindly come to the microphone if you don't mind. Thank you. And we hope that you will participate.
What role does, in your opinion, U.S. play in setting up this terrible situation? We overthrow Chile and all these different countries. We back dictators time and time again. What role does the CIA and the U.S. involvement in Central and South America play in this problem?
Thank you.
Is this working this time? Okay. Oh, okay, good. Very good question. I've spent a lot of my life documenting the role of the U.S. government in drug policies in Latin America. And the very short answer, for the long answer, you can read my book, Drugs and Democracies in Latin America. I edited it. It's not just me. It was a collective project. But the short answer is that basically the U.S. exported its punitive drug paradigm, its drug laws to Latin America, Latin American countries that were dependent on U.S. assistance and U.S. economic support in international multilateral institutions like the Inter-American Development Bank, the IMF, were basically forced to adopt one-size-fits-all, extremely punitive drug policies that included things like mandatory minimums, very disproportionate sentences, et cetera. And so I think that this was largely a U.S.-made problem in Latin America. And for years, it was really considered taboo to even have a discussion about it. It really wasn't until the emergence of the Latin America Drug Policy Commission in 2006, around 2006, where you started having former presidents speaking out about about the damage that had been caused by these policies. And they look at it from a Latin American perspective. They did everything that the U.S. asked them to do for decades. And what did they get for it? Drug use expanded tremendously across the region. The drug trade was not dented in any way. In fact, it's alive and well as never before, as documented in the last World Drug Report put out by the United Nations. Violence increased dramatically. Corruption increased dramatically. So you finally had a period where Latin American governments began questioning the role, questioning the policy itself, the paradigm, and began talking about alternatives. I don't want to go into, I could talk about this all night, and I won't, but I think that the point where we are at now in Latin America is that there is a lot more discussion and debate. We've had some important reforms in some countries, such as Costa Rica, some in Mexico, But we're still in a situation where the rhetoric and the debate has not been matched by action. So Latin America still has a long way to go to correct the injustices caused by these laws. Many people were making, well, most of the profits of the drug trade remain in the consuming countries. So yes, there were a lot of people in the United States. You know, if you're in the illicit drug trade in the United States, you're going to be making a lot more money than if you're at the other end, you know, in Colombia, and let alone a small farmer producing coca. But there's also the whole drug industrial complex, if you will. You have the company Sikorsky and others making the helicopters. You have DynCorp flying the planes. You have Monsanto producing glyphosate. You know, so there are a lot of, and you see this in Washington where I live, where these companies are lobbying heavily to keep these policies in place. And now you're starting to see, very disturbingly, the export of the U.S. prison system to Latin America, and both the privatization of prisons, the beginning of an expansion of electronic monitoring, which I find deeply, deeply problematic. So, yeah.
Yeah. Thank you. Thank you very much. Is there any other question, comment? Would be great. So here.
First of all, thank you so much. This is really great. Gracias por compartir tu historia. Es muy impactante. I have two questions, if you'll permit me. One is, you've presented the research on eight countries. How much do you see variation between countries, or is essentially the situation the same across the board? And secondly, what has been the response of the governments in these eight countries or some of the countries where you've been able to present these findings? Maybe Facundo has actually spoken to officials in Uruguay. Is there a sense that there's a willingness to try to tackle this issue?
So maybe I could answer the first part, and then Gonzalo and Luciano, maybe something more on. Well, generally speaking, we could say that throughout the eight countries, we have very similar situations. So on the one hand, you have the implementation of the international drug policy regime with pretrial detention, blah, 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 blah. The number of people in prison for drug offenses are increasing. In terms of children's rights, in basically all countries, we have the same recognition of children's rights at the constitutional level. We have laws that protect children's rights, but we also have a lack of articulation among institutions. We have lack of data basically in all countries. Then we have some interesting differences. So, for example, you have Uruguay that's regulated marijuana. So there are some thoughts on the effects of that. But still, it's very interesting about the Uruguay chapter because it's very critical of the effects of regulation. Critical, which doesn't mean pessimistic or you know, in a way that doesn't mean anything, but still we're seeing how it doesn't, still the number of children with incarcerated parents is increasing. And at the same time as you have the regulation of marijuana, you have the increase for the trafficking of crack cocaine. So basically you have the most progressive regime with the worst legacy of prohibition, which is substance-based. Then you have Costa Rica, which is the only country where there's been a drug policy reform focused on women who are in prison, so that's an interesting example. Mexico has a bit of a bad practice, surprise. Sorry, I live there, and it's where I do my research, so it's what I know better. Where you have a federal prisons for people in prison for drug offenses, pretty much based on the U.S. prison system, so with very devastating effects on keeping people away from their families, very expensive to go visit. So within this general framework of similarities, which allowed us to do a general report, a regional report, we have some kind of differences, but nothing too striking, to be honest. And maybe another thing that's similar and it's very worrying is the criminalization of micro-trafficking and how that's pushing up the number of people in prison for minor non-violent. I think that's it for the first part of the answer. Do you want to talk about the presentation of the report in Uruguay, maybe some of that experience or something? Because I think it's where
I was going to say that the answers have been also different.
actually, in some of these countries, it is the first time that it's a there is a report written about the issue. So the advocacy part needs to be done now. The good thing is that, for example, last week we were at a meeting where all children's rights authorities gathered and we presented, there are some documents there on the table, guidelines for the states on how to address this issue. Many of the things that we included in those guidelines came out of these reports. So coming from countries where we didn't have relationship with the government or they didn't provide the information we asked for, to Uruguay, that again leads the way. Actually, initially this project was supposed to be only 5 countries when we presented the proposal, but we included Brazil because of its magnitude and because we found a great researcher there. We included Panama because our partners there were studied the project in a community and they called us and they said, listen, all the kids, as you saw in the stats that Corina presented, all the kids here who has parents in prison are because of drug policies. And then Uruguay, because actually Uruguay has a, correct me if I'm wrong, but they have the National Drug Board, basically, which is a form of representatives from all ministries that gather together to think about how to address drug policy. So with Gurises Unidos, we presented the proposal for them to fund the Uruguayan chapter, which they did, which they revised, which they helped us present. They actually presented, and Corina was there in August at the Municipal Hall of Montevideo. So the government is pretty much behind this project and is willing to find ways in which to start addressing drug policy from the children's rights lenses. I don't know if I'm answering, but we still have a way to go. And you know, I think Coleta mentioned something. We have a lot of turnover in our country. So when you're working with an authority that is behind, suddenly they change and you need to start back over again. And you know, maybe you know that, yeah. So that's the answer.
I want to say only one thing. I think Facundo represents... Can you, the mic?
Oh, Inés.
Yeah. The thing I want to say that Facundo represents the voice of many of the children that have incarcerated parents all over the region, all over America Latina, because they live the same things and the same effects of drugs policy all over America Latina and the Caribbean. Perhaps laws are different, perhaps they have different mechanisms, but the effects of policy, of drug policy to children are the same. We can bring here and here TB children, Brazilian children, an Argentina boy, and they will say the same. We are not visible. We go to school and we cannot talk about this. No one asks us if we have a mom or a parent incarcerated. And we have shame to talk about that. And we... In America Latina, most of the children says to us that when their parents goes to prison, they were poor. And after their parents go to prison, they were more poor. And that's one of the most strong effects that policy of drugs are having in America Latina and Caribbean. I'm sorry. I'm Gonzalo Sanchez. I'm from Gurises Unidos, and it's an Uruguayan NGO that means something like United Kids. Gurises means kids in
Guarani.
Guarani, yes. And I'm also a member of Plataforma NAPES. That is the platforma that works on the defense of the right of children with incarcerated parents.
Thank you to all the speakers. It's my experience is in Brazil. I'm from New York, but I spent some time in a community in Brazil that was kind of in the middle of both police and rival gangs in Rio de Janeiro. So it's a complex thing that there are many questions that come to mind, and I've never met anybody from Uruguay. Yo voy a intentar hacer una pregunta para ti, Facundo, en español, pero perdona, mi español es un poco... Misturado con portugués y estoy cansado también. Pero bueno, es que tú has dicho que la cosa que me salió, que tú aguardabas todas las emociones, tal vez cuando en esta época, cuando tu padre estaba en la cárcel y cuando salió de la cárcel. And I don't think this was translated, but I think you said that salió más violento, which that has to do, I think, also con las condiciones, with the conditions in prison. And I'm also very interested in the question of men and masculinity and how and what that does. So, bueno, la pregunta. And I don't think that the question of reconstituting a family, if the father comes out and he's more violent and the children have to leave, which is what I understood from Facundo, then you've got a very basic problem. But bueno, para ti, yo trabajaba con un grupo de niños, con un ONGI, non-profit, en Río de Janeiro, en la ciudad de Brasil, Río de Janeiro, tal vez parecido con ti. Y bueno, ellos hacían, era un ONGI con la música, hacían percusión, cosas así, para make a channel, how would I say that in Spanish, para poner su energía y su todas las emociones en una cosa disciplinada. Y bueno, esa fue la manera para ellos y también había amigos, personas de la familia, de la comunidad. Bueno, la pregunta para ti es, en esa época difícil, ¿cómo es que tú, qué fue las formas, las cosas que tú hacías y las personas que apoyaste a ti para pasar por ese tiempo? Para sobrevivir y para... Y para sure, a lot of words. So basically I'm asking him in these difficult times, what were the forms, the things he did, and the people in his community, his families that helped him transcend, as I was trying to say, or find strength as a young man, I'll add that, como un hombre joven, para ver tu padre así, para ver tu familia así, como que tú lograste, how did you find the strength, el poder de continuar, y bueno, how did you find the strength to continue?
Hablarlo no lo hablaba con nadie, o sea, era yo y mi hermana me preguntaba, pero no era que hablábamos.
I wouldn't talk to anybody. I talked to my sister, but we didn't say much. We talked between each other.
Y donde, por así decirlo, despejaba la mente era con las actividades de gurises, pero tampoco era que descargaba 100%, siempre quedaba angustiado porque tenía a mi padre en la mente.
The main thing that I used to do to calm my mind was Gurises Unidos, but I couldn't calm my mind completely. I always had anxiety towards my father being in prison.
Las actividades de Gurises Unidos, ¿qué fueron?
Perdón.
What
las
activities was Gurises Unidos?
Una era fútbol tres tiempos y otra era concurriendo al liceo. Eran las dos actividades que yo iba.
¿Concurriendo al liceo?
¿Qué es concurriendo?
Just going to school.
One was participating in a football match. And the other one was going to school.
Just one quick follow-up. En la escuela había personas o resources, fuentes de apoyo en la escuela para ti.
The school had resources.
Apoyo psicológico y eso. Apoyo psicológico. Apoyos.
Support, psychological report, support our colleagues, friends. En la escuela.
En el liceo que yo concurría, sabían mi situación, pero no tenía ningún tipo de apoyo, ni psicológico ni emocional.
The school, the high school that I went, they knew about my situation, but I didn't have any support, psychological or from friends.
Okay. So we're gonna finish this interchange here, but we can continue talking afterwards.